You're listening to Second Stories, created and produced by Second Story with me, Abigail Brocker, as your host. Second Story is a nonprofit based in Northern Virginia, working to provide safe havens and opportunities to grow and thrive to youth in crisis and their families. We help homeless youth and youth in crisis step away from their first story, one often marked by abuse, hardship, and crisis, and write their own second story, full of hope and promise. This is a Second Story's topical episode. These topical episodes inspect a challenge or issue from one of the stories you've already heard and place it into a larger context, helping us to better understand the scope of some of the challenges young people in our community face. We talk more precisely and informatively about these issues, and we keep the conversation grounded in actual experiences and actual stories. In our last episode, we heard from Caitlin, someone who seemed to have everything against her and still excelled, making the most of an extremely challenging situation and seeking the things that would give her the opportunities she craved: education, liberation, independence. Her episode inspired us, and if you haven't listened to her story yet, pause this episode and listen to that one first. It's a worthy use of your time and an important starting point to the conversation that we'll be having here. Her story also prompts us to ask some questions. By all accounts, she seems like many of the peers, coworkers, and neighbors we admire. Stable and successful, articulate and kind. It makes us wonder, how many others in our lives had beginnings like hers? That brings us to Ann Kim, a journalist, author, and fountain of wisdom and insight on youth issues. Her book, Abandoned: America's Lost Youth and the Crisis of Disconnection, explores a sobering reality: that nearly 5 million young people, nearly 12% of youth aged 16 to 24, experience disconnection and abandonment as they enter adulthood. Anne has dedicated many years of her life to exploring why this is, why parts of Caitlin's experience are not all that unusual, and the trajectories that don't necessarily look like hers. Anne educates us on the causes and consequences of this reality, and helps us to understand what we can do about it. Anne is our first non-staff guest. She's a good friend of Second Stories, and I am so eager to talk to her. I had the opportunity to meet Anne earlier this year because she writes about Second Story in her book, and it's really an honor to have this time together. So Anne, can you start off by telling us more about yourself, maybe a little bit about your background and how you got into this work, this subject?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me, Abigail. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. So I've been writing about social policy and poverty and economic opportunity for close to 2 decades now. Just background-wise, I started out as a journalist and a lawyer and kind of a journalist again. So I've always been really interested in writing about public policy. And this topic of who has opportunity in America, especially young people, and the way that's changed over the years is something that's really kind of fascinated me for a long time. Because I think, you know, with the changes in the economy and what you see happening to young people is a microcosm of these really large trends, which, you know, what's happening now with the coronavirus and COVID-19 are really going to exacerbate a lot of inequalities and inequities that have been hidden for a very long time. And it's really kind of discouraging to think about what we're facing over the next year, 2 years. The title of the book is Abandoned, and it refers to the structural forces that have led to so many young people to be, you know, literally abandoned, cut off from economic opportunity. I was fortunate to have the support of the Annie Casey Foundation to write this book. And what it is a profile of the problem of disconnection, the scope of it, who is disconnected, why, but also what you can do about it. And that's where the profile of Second Story comes in, as well as other organizations that are really making transformational changes in the lives of young adults. This is not an insurmountable problem at all. And it is a problem that people whatever your ideology, wherever you are, whoever you are, should be concerned about and want to do something about, because it's about the future of our economy and our country. This book is also about peeling away some of the misperceptions that might exist about who has opportunity in America and who doesn't. Among young people, the role of structural racism and structural barriers to opportunity, and the broader policy change that needs to happen so that every young person has a shot at success and self-sufficiency and economic dignity. Right now, there are too many young people who've kind of fallen out of the conversation about all of these issues. And I just really hope this book highlights a population that hasn't gotten enough attention, but deserves all the attention they can get.
It is. So that helps. I know that you write a lot, and I've just been so interested to read a lot of what you've had to say about the broader issue. We talk about how we have these smaller stories that are so valuable, but we need some context to help us understand them. So I don't know that everyone knows what we're talking about when we use the term disconnected youth. So maybe, first of all, can you explain to us what that means?
Sure. A young person who is disconnected is someone who is both out of school and out of work. So that means they are cut off from mainstream economic opportunity. Now, before the crisis hit, when we had a good economy, when the unemployment rate was low, we still had 4.5 million young people between the ages of 16 and 24 who were disconnected, not in school, not in work. And that's 11.5%, more than one on 10, you know, out of all young people in America who are in these really dire straits when the rest of the economy seemed to be humming along. Now, one of the impacts, I think, of what's happening is that young people are really going to be, they are bearing the brunt of the crisis. And what was already a crisis pre-pandemic is going to be catastrophic going forward. And I think that a lot of the resources, we're not talking about the plight of young people as much as we should be right now, but I think this generation is going to be marked by what is happening now.
Yeah, that's a really interesting observation to think about how we'll talk about this generation in a few decades and the ways that they are responding and the disadvantages that they have because of what we're seeing with COVID-19.
Yeah, you know, my generation, I remember graduating from law school during a recession. And that's nothing, you know, compared to what the millennials went through after the financial crisis.
Yeah.
That is being dwarfed by what is happening now. You know, with disconnection too, I mean, the research shows that if you were out of school and out of work for even, you know, a relatively brief period of time during these formative years of 16 to 24, you lose out on a lot of opportunities to further education, but also make contact, you know, your first boss, that first mentor, and you think back about those early work experiences, all of that is being taken away from young adults. And it's going to have long-term effect on the ability of young people to establish themselves economically, and they may be at least a decade behind even this generation in terms of their ability to afford a house,
right,
get some long-term financial stability, build up savings. If you were not connected to begin with, even before the crisis, then your disadvantages have compounded even more.
Right.
And that's the group I worry the most about.
Right. So what do you think, in light of all of this and before this, what do you think people most misunderstand about disconnected youth? And another word that I know we use to talk about this group is opportunity youth, especially in Northern Virginia.
One of the reasons I wrote this book was to tackle a few of the misconceptions about who is disconnected and why. And, you know, misperceptions, I think, has to do with who is doing the disconnecting. There's a stereotype, I think, and mythology about the amount of effort that anyone can work hard and play by the rules. You know, you will get rich. You know, disconnection is sometimes, I think, perceived as a matter of personal responsibility or choice. you know, that the stereotypical disconnected person is some young guy who's in his parents' basement playing video games 24/7. Like, well, no. A lot of disconnection happens because the disconnection is happening due to failures in government policy or to structural factors that do the disconnecting, that sever a young person from the opportunities that they should have access to. And I write about this. I call geography is a factor, for instance. So I call them opportunity deserts. You know, if you're in... if you're in a part of, you know, a city, an urban area where you are cut off from public transit, when you don't have access to decent education, when you're in neighborhoods where the adults around you are not working and don't have opportunities to connect you with, you are in a desert. This could also be in rural America, where the rates of disconnection are actually significantly higher than in cities because there is no physical proximity to either jobs or education. There are actually more than 40 million Americans who live more than half an hour away from the nearest community college or university. And we all know how important higher education has become. In a place like Fairfax County, where there's so much affluence and so much wealth, it's hard to believe that there is as much homelessness, disconnection, and poverty. But that is one of the reasons why I chose to write about Second Story in the book, to show that this phenomenon can happen anywhere. It happens everywhere. And the need is great no matter where you are, although there are certainly parts of the country where the need is much more concentrated and much more dire. But there's no question that there are people in Fairfax County, young people in Fairfax County, many, who desperately need help.
Right. So there's one thing specifically that I know leads to disconnection a lot, which is young people who've been in foster care, and this term of aging out of the foster care system, where you're not receiving the support of the state or your foster care family or anymore, which I know you can enlighten us more on this, but is often the initiative of the young person for a variety of reasons. So one highlight from Caitlin's story in our previous episode, she did something really remarkable that we don't see young people do very often. She transitioned out of foster care of her own volition, and then she made a way for herself. Maybe shed some light on youth like Caitlin, and also why young people are not often as fortunate as Caitlin was to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, Caitlin's story is extraordinary. The level of resourcefulness that she shows, and the level of knowledge and the way that she's able to navigate the system, it's really rare. And she is definitely to be applauded for what she was able to achieve. The reality is that the outcomes in foster care are, you know, horrific for so many young people. I mentioned that government failures in government policy are often the instrument of disconnection. And the foster care system is certainly one of the drivers of disconnection among, you know, severely disadvantaged young people. I'll just throw out one or two facts about what happens to most or a lot of young people who age out of foster care. And in Caitlin's case, the word emancipation does seem to be the right word. She freed herself from a system that may not have been working for her. For a lot of people, for a lot of young people, it's more like abandonment. They are cut off from, you know, what minimal supports they may have had at age 18 or age 21, depending upon what state they're in. But the reality is that for the 20,000 or so young people who age out of foster care every year, only about half will ever finish getting a GED or a high school diploma. Fewer than 10% are going to have a two-year or four-year degree by the time they're 26. Fewer than half are going to be employed by that age. About a third are homeless, and one-third will have been incarcerated. So for a system that's intended to be all about child welfare, that's actually not what's happening.
I did not know those statistics. I've read statistics about foster care, but the way you laid those out is helpful and so devastating. And that's referencing something that Caitlin talked about too. And she really felt hurt overall by the foster care system, I guess you would say. I don't know that that's, I don't want to put words in her mouth because she didn't use that word specifically, but I guess that's my reiteration of it. She felt like it was overburdened. She overall felt like the families who took her in were really good people, treated her extremely well. She was so, so thankful for them, but felt like there was no way to get over that burden of being left out of the boundaries between her and the foster family, which I know are necessary and healthy, though there is different language with this is your foster family, and yet you have all these boundaries that they don't have with their biological children or adopted children. I asked her, do you have ideas about how it could have been better for you after so many years of remembering your experiences? And she just basically said, I think it's a huge thing. I don't know that I could do a rehashing of that and come up with better solutions because they're big problems. Do you have ideas for ways that that could be improved?
I mean, that is really heartbreaking to hear. This is why organizations like Second Story are so important. I mean, what I hear from what you say about what Caitlin went through was that regardless of how good, quote unquote, the experiences were, there was still, sounds like, a lack of sense of belonging, a sense of family, a sense of real connection that really would have helped her feel much more situated. And when you think about the experience of young adulthood today, that connection to family, that home base, the security of having someone to anchor your experience as you're going through those years from 16 to 22 has become so much more important, not just from, you know, from a financial standpoint, like a place to live, but that emotional and social support. It's hard to, government is not a very good parent, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine exactly the kind of government program that can ensure that all young adults have caring adults in their lives.
Right.
Second Story, I think, in organizations like that are as close as you can come. You know, nonprofits, philanthropy that really try to be that substitute family. The Second Story alums that I talked to for the book, that's kind of the word that they use to describe their experience.
Yeah.
And other organizations that have worked with young people and given as much a sense of that security and belonging and love that they really felt like they needed. That's an element that you may not be able to replicate with a government program, but the government can support those kinds of programs and make sure that they thrive.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different thing.
Right. That is very interesting. And especially now that you mention it, I do talk to youth when they're telling their stories of their experiences with us, and they use that word fairly frequently. And that's another thing, kind of shifting gears, that stood out to me in Caitlin's story. Her mom failed her in so many ways. But one of the things that she talks about her mom offering her was a level of something like qualitative support. The list of items for providing for your child, like housing, safety, wasn't necessarily there. But her mom gave her a lot of really sage advice. She talks about how her mom really encouraged her to get an education and how no one could ever take that away from her. And that was extremely motivating for her to pursue an education. She felt like due to her mom's poor choices, she was really empowered in the choices she would be able to make for herself. She'd seen someone make all these bad choices and she didn't want to live that way. Can you talk a little bit about that and about that nurturing factor too? And even someone teaching a young person how to be resourceful, how to have common sense, how sometimes that can aid to all of these challenges too.
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of frameworks to talk about. Think about it as a set of skills on one level, you know, soft skills, if you're talking about in the workforce context, you know, the importance of showing up on time, that kind of thing. But I think, you know, what you say raises a really important point. Like, those skills are only developed when there is a strong mentoring relationship and trust and love between a caring adult and a young person. And it's that level of trust and mentorship that leads to the kind of valuable guidance that a young person needs. A mentor can also be a parent or a coach, or I also mentioned a terrific program called the Promotor Pathway that the Latin American Youth Center in DC runs. And it's
great.
A supercharged mentorship program where you have these mentors who do all of the above. They're able to help a young person navigate the various public programs that may be of help to them from a financial standpoint, but also give them this kind of advice and resources and how to survive in the adult world. And it's about building social capital, is another term used a lot to describe the set of internal resources that every young adult needs to be able to launch themselves and get that sense of self-sufficiency. But you need that strong base of people behind you and under you who can catch you if you make a mistake, support you as you're taking that first step into the workforce or into the great unknown of independence. Right. The fact that so many young people don't have that base of support is really worrying. And every young person should. Every young person deserves to have caring adults and more than one. And a whole network of caring adults behind them.
How do you feel like our communities can do a better job of supporting disconnected youth? You know, we talk about support like Second Story, which of course I believe is so important. I know that you do too. But even broader than that, when we're talking about youth needing these positive adult figures in their lives, what are some of the best ways that you have found that we as a community and individuals can support disconnected youth?
Yeah, one way to think about it are the potential points of connection for a young person and how you strengthen those connections or forge new connections they don't currently exist. And school is one of them. There's quite a bit that needs to happen in schools to ensure that every child feels as if their education is relevant to them. They have career pathways that are open to them, that are right for them. You know, so many young people I spoke to said they dropped out at some point because they felt like teachers didn't care or the education wasn't relevant or they didn't see the pathway to the right kind of job. That needs to stop. You know, we need to change the educational system in a way so that every student feels valued and there's a pathway for them. Businesses are part of this equation as well. You used the words opportunity youth early on in this conversation. And that term signals many things. It signals the way that many youth feel about themselves, you know, as untapped sources of creativity, hard work, potential, imagination that are currently being untapped. But it also should signify the way that businesses should look upon young people as untapped sources of energetic, innovative potential for their own companies. So that means more apprenticeships, internships, early work opportunities. There are great organizations like the Urban Alliance that have what are called supported internships to ensure that more young people are hired by high-profile companies and, more importantly, succeed in these placements so they build valuable connections. Civic organizations have a role to play. That includes faith-based organizations, organizations that have strong mentorship programs, other ways to build greater social capital within communities that might not have those strong bonds of community, especially now. And underlying all of that, of course, is more robust government support for what works. Government has two roles here. One is to fix the failures in the foster care system, the criminal justice system, and places where there's not enough infrastructure that needs more government investment to fix the transit systems or educational systems, what have you. But a lot of it is also, you know, support for the programs that work. We know what works, but we're failing to invest.
Yeah.
And we need to invest a lot more dollars to reach even just a fraction of the young people who need more help. So, every institution that you can think of, I think, has some role to play in ensuring that young people are connected, reconnected, and strengthen the connections that they do have.
Yeah. It's so interesting because every point you hit, I can think of a group, a workplace, a civic group, a church that has done that for Second Story. And I can think of examples of avenues of support that we receive or don't receive enough of. And I think in my experience, which is limited compared to yours, but it matches up with my experience at Second Story as well. You know, I imagine that there are people listening who are thinking to themselves, I'm not exactly sure what I can do, or especially in this area, have high-powered jobs and are in demanding positions that take a lot of their time. But that is so valuable. I was speaking to two young people in the past few months, I would say. One of them who got an apprenticeship with an organization who supports Second Story and is just amazing and has offered things like that and is doing very well, came back recently to fix something at Second Story for Teens in Crisis.
That's
and it was
cool.
It was so cool. It was really special to talk to him.
And work gives people purpose and meaning. And that's true for young people as well. And work is where you make those connections. Work is where you grow and you learn and you build out your network. And it is actually kind of hard right now, for especially now, mm-hmm. for young people to stay employed. But even in the before times, yeah. young people had a harder time breaking into the workforce. And yeah, just a note on you know, how more difficult it is going to be. I was just looking at some numbers the other day and looking just at the carnage of what's happening with the retail industry and food service and some of these other industries that heavily rely on young people. I didn't know this, but 30% of servers are between ages 20 and 24, and 1 in 5 retail workers.
Wow.
And so, yeah, and you think about who is unemployed, and it is young people.
Yeah.
And these are all young people. They're going to need someone to take a chance on them in the new economy. And there are, I think, going to be new industries that arise. You know, Americans are innovative people, and we will always come up with ways, workarounds. There will be new industries, new ways of doing business. These businesses need to look at young people and say, you know, I'm going to give a chance to someone who used to be in food service or used to be at a restaurant. These young people are going to be hard workers.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think this age group is a complicated age group in a lot of ways. I mean, I see every day how much people care about young people. It's a really, amidst all of the polarization that we have, people generally agree that we should be investing in young people and we should be doing more to support them. And at the same time, it's a really critical age group because they're adults and there's a lot of different opinions and policies and et cetera, about how we address that critical age. And I think it's so important to be talking about it, writing about it, et cetera.
And there's a double standard, right? If you are a young person of color or a young person of a particular background, you're more likely to be adultified by society. There's no allowances for you if you make a mistake.
Yeah.
You know, in some states, many states still, you know, you're treated as an adult if you're 16 for certain crimes or even younger, you know, for particular mm-hmm. crimes. Whereas if you're an upper middle class or middle class person, a young adult is still treated in many ways like a child. You know, in fact, the runway to adulthood has gotten longer and longer and longer.
Yeah.
And you have people who are 30 who are still relying on their parents for support.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of reasons why that is the case. You know, housing is more, you know, more expensive. Mm-hmm. Education is more expensive. And you need more of it to become independent. But we do tend to, you know, young adults who are affluent are infantilized, and young adults who are poor are adultified. And that difference in treatment has led to a stratification. It's exacerbating the inequality we're already seeing at all levels of society. And the more resources are being poured into young adulthood for some people, the inequality in outcomes is going to worsen as well.
Yeah.
And so, and that is another issue that the book addresses too. Like the source of inequality happens in young adulthood to some extent because there's so much investment being poured into some adult young adults, and other young adults are seeing no investment in who they are at all.
That is such a tricky thing because especially in this area, I think people understandably want to and do pour so much money and time into their children.
Sure.
And one of the things that we say a lot is, can you imagine your own kids going without food and water and education and safety? Meanwhile, our standard of living for our own kids is so, so high. And that is a huge, huge gap.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, and it's in danger of getting worse.
Yeah. Thank you, Anne, so much for doing this, for talking to us, for giving us your time and your insight. You just have so much wisdom and experience to share, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Abigail. Really appreciate this too.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Second Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, we would be so thankful if you rated our podcast and left us a review. Be sure to also hit subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. Second Stories is created and produced by Second Story with support from our technical director, Franklin Vaughn. Second Story is a nonprofit based in Northern Virginia that works to provide safe havens and opportunities to grow and thrive to youth in crisis and their families. Learn more about what Second Story does and how you can support us at second-story.org. We hope you'll join us next time.